This is the Nomad Futurist Podcast, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and transformation. Connect with us, share your thoughts with us at nomadfuturist.com. Let's get this started. Here are Phil and Nabil.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Nomad Futurist. This is your co-host Nabil Mahmoud, currently from Arizona.
This is your co-host Philip Cubbins from Montclair, New Jersey.
And this is Paul Hammer from TechStars, which is a new, well, we're going to find out during the podcast from London, live for you.
That's welcome, Paul. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. So before we get started, let's get to share a little bit about you with our audience. So could you expand on this new venture that you've started?
Yeah, I used to organize a lot of data center events and various other things across the globe. And it was the traditional trade show, as you all know it, which is like a data center world. Probably a lot of the listeners have been to it. And I left that company more than a year ago, joined an organizer called EasyFairs, which is very community focused. And I was like, oh, community focused sounds interesting. Why don't we try to adopt this to the tech space? And then while I started doing my research on it and trying to develop something, I realized that if you actually take away what the vendors want, which we call exhibitors, right, which is like your usual suspects who try to sell machinery, equipment, or engineering skills, and you actually focus on the thought leaders as well, the community that actually run data centers or the topics that matter to them, you realize there's a massive gap because a lot of them don't even want to attend events anymore because they say, we see the same people on stage. We hear the same nonsense every time, and sort of the theme is changing every year. One year it's sustainability, and now currently the trend is going into AI. So we're trying to reshape all of this and try to create something for the community. So it's time for the 21st century, boys and girls.
Tell us how you really feel, Paul.
No, I'm just opening up.
Just gotta pull the string just a bit more.
We're spitting fire. We're spitting fire from the get-go.
No, I'm not spitting fire. I just think it's time for.
He meant nonsense in the best possible use of that word.
No, I'm not. People are great organizers. Not that, but I just think it's time for the next generation to come through. This is also for the event space because you guys are also like, I wouldn't say oldies, but you guys are also probably, we have a generational difference. I'm not trying to disrespect you guys in your podcast, but what I'm trying to say is like, you have a massive gender gap, but you also have an age gap within the industry. This is not just data centers, this is across tech, I would say. And if I look at my generation, even myself, if I want to attend a conference or something, you need to offer me more than looking at the same panel every time, anywhere I go across the globe.
I think there is something to that, right? Usually people get offended by this concept of the age gap or even the gender gap because we don't want you to think that people that are older are not as capable as people that are younger. It's not really about that. It's about making the experience relevant to a generation that has different lived experiences. The generations behind us grew up in a different world and they are digital natives, right? So for us, we're in this world because we straddled the before digital times and now. And in many ways, as much as we consider ourselves futurists, I think people of our generation still consume information in the more traditional way because that's how we were brought up. That's how we learned. And we've evolved a bit. I'm not writing with pen as much as I was 25 years ago. But in general, there is a distinct difference with how generations consume knowledge. And if we're going to attract the next generation, we need to approach things differently. And we are not the generation that's going to be able to do that.
Yeah, you can bring. I think, Paul, just to add to what you said, you bring a great point, right? So we've got to look back in history. It's nothing new. We have had the generational divide, the race divide, the cultural divide, so on and so forth, and all these gaps that we keep referring to for centuries. So in reality, it's nothing new. I think the biggest challenge that we've got is the fact that with all the media and with all these engagements and the interactions, for that matter, or exposure, it's a lot more obvious today than it's ever been before. And secondly, I would love to know, how do we go about addressing this? Do we need to be transparent, upfront, welcoming, or do we need that'd be great. Do we need to continue to build on these silos and try to find some sort of remediation? What's your opinion on that? How do we go about addressing this issue? We know this issue has existed for decades. It's nothing new. How do we go about fixing it?
Well, I think, first of all, you need to make it relatable to the following generations. Like, what can they relate to, right? So they want to see maybe certain influencers, or I'll give you a good example, people that work in marketing, like brand marketing, they're thinking about how I can advertise in the metaverse, all of these things. And this is all done by like 25-year-old, 30-year-olds and brand management and big companies across the globe, because like, okay, Well, we need to think about the, like, advertising in the virtual space even. Well, if they try to relate this to the directors who run these big marketing companies, for them, it's like, no, you need to put it in a newspaper, or you put it somewhere on the subway on the side and put a post on it because you're going to get a bigger reach. And what I'm trying to say is, like, in the tech industry, what I've realized, it's becoming a game of let's tick the box. And this is like, okay, why should you not allow, or this is why I really think it's great what you guys do. Why should I not allow young people to enter conferences free of charge? So they can also see the technologies, they can hear the keynotes, they can engage with the other generations and actually pick their brains. Like, oh, imagine if you're a student and you're studying computer science or whatever it is, and you would be able to go to Philip or Nabil and be like, hey, what made you get into the space those years ago and why are you still in it? Like, well, when we're planning now the conference book of our event, there's something I call it the Big Bang, right? So we're going to have the Big Bang of internet, where it all started, but where's it all going to now? Let's try to bring this generation who did the Big Bang and hear how they envisioned it, it would look like and how it actually turned out to be now. Because even for them, it's like, they want to share their knowledge. You guys want to share your knowledge, but you guys just don't have the platform because, well, it's $3,000 to get a ticket or it's $2,500 to get a ticket. And at the end, it's the same people running around in the room and everybody's just looking at job titles and company names. Why don't we strip the job titles, the company names, and it's just Nabil, Philip, and Paul. And I'll meet you at a coffee place and I say, what do you do? And you say, oh, I do this and this. Oh, amazing. I do this and this. But it doesn't matter who you work for because we're all just one community. So why can't we just unite and really share the knowledge? It works in the DevOps space with open source where they just share codes and they develop things on their own. And why doesn't it work in this part of the industry? I just really scratch my head over it. Sorry, guys. I'm very passionate about it.
Because... No. It's interesting. I was just going to say that's one of the reasons why I like you. It's imperative that we don't talk down to people. We talk to them and with them. And you bring up a great point. It's not just about bringing the students or the younger generation or people that are not from the sector into these events and talking to them, but also giving them an opportunity to express and share their experiences. What do they need? How do they learn? And where do they see the gaps are? So understanding their barriers or gateways into the space. Like,
they're the ultimate end user, right? So the concept that we're building this digital infrastructure for the benefit of large banks or multinational corporations is just nonsensical, because at the end of the day, all they're doing is trying to support applications and content that's going to be consumed and leveraged by this younger generation. So not having them with a seat at the table is a way to stifle innovation, one would think. But to touch on your passion for a second for this, which is not only infectious, but something that's sorely missing, right? I don't think anybody goes to a data center conference and passion is the first characteristic that comes out when they're filling out the suggestion box. Like, it was too passionate in here. Let's take some step backs. Who is Paul? Since our goal collectively is to humanize this industry, how does one go from birth, which apparently, if Paul hasn't notified you, is a lot more recent than Nabil and I's birth, to trying to disrupt the event organizing space in the data center industry? Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? Oh, that's an interesting one. So I grew up, born in Germany, and then grew up in the Middle East. So I lived in Dubai for many years, studied in Australia. I went to school. I had 126 different nationalities in my high school when I graduated. So this just puts in perspective. So I always grew up with different ethnicities, cultures, everything in the mix. And then I moved back to Austria for a couple of months to stay with my parents. And I was like, nah, I can't be here. I'm back in a box. And then I moved back over to London. And I originally come actually from commodity trading. It's a completely different space. And then I got into event space and got the chance to build this really beautiful event over in Germany. But then I just realized that the problem is what you have with legacies, which a lot of event organizers have. If you have an event which runs the same way since 10, 15, 20 years, you're not going to change it. You might change the packaging and the colors of it, but the inside is still the same. And this is something which can't be changed. So the only way to do it is if you need to find somebody who gives you the backing and the support and says, you know what? I think this is worth a shot. Why don't we try to do something completely different? And this is where I'm at the moment. And it's beautiful because it's like, really, I actually went and spoke to all kind of different age groups, seniorities, backgrounds. And I said, what do you guys really want? And what do people want? People just want to interact with people on a normal level. So you want to go somewhere, see some amazing speakers on the stage, go and grab your Chinese from one of the food trucks, maybe sit down, have a couple of meetings, go in your chill out area with beanbags, do a bit of work, and then go back in another conference. And in between, you might pass by somebody who was displaying some new piece of technology and you get really curious and interested about it and you chat with the person about it. And it creates like this little ecosystem over a 2-day period where it's like, okay, I'm within my comfort zone because all the people around me speak the same language. And then in the afternoons, you have students coming through as well who are hungry for knowledge. They want to understand. I think for me, it's more about building communities now and building reach, because anywhere you speak to someone, you get the same answer. And I'm going to give you a beautiful example where I saw that the concept worked. Monday evening, we had a meetup in Munich. We put it up about 2.5 weeks ago. 280 people showed up, an Irish pub in the central of Munich. This old gentleman came up to me, Otto. Otto's about 70, 72, 73.
That's a good definition of old.
Sorry, guys. But in Bavaria, they have this very old school tradition of meeting at a beer keller once a week to meet and to play cards and stuff. And he's like, I came tonight because all me and my friends were sitting there every evening and we say, what is AI and how can we understand AI? And I was like, okay, so you're in the right place. I was like, let me introduce you to, there was a younger guy, Florian, who works for Databricks. And I was like, Florian, meet Otto. Otto, meet Florian. You both come from Munich. Otto wants to understand what AI is really about in data. And there you go. The connection was made. And this was the beauty about it, because somebody finally got the knowledge from the source. Next thing, Otto says, well, why don't you come next week to one of our meetups so you can tell it to the rest of the guys there as well who want to understand it. But this is what community is, and this is how it should be, right?
Are we going back to the old days that everyone's going to start hanging out at the pubs and these conversations are going to be at the pubs, because they used to be at the pubs before?
Certainly in Bavaria.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know. It's not a pub. It's only a beer keller. But put all of this in an event space with a cool location and conferences and speaking sessions and masterclasses around it, and you created a completely different concept around it. And this is sort of what we're trying to do.
Look, my favorite part of every conference, I say it every time I post 7,000 selfies of myself at all these freaking conferences, is the non-scheduled meetings. All of the organic meetings are always the best. That's where the magic happens and all those things. So having a conference that's designed to focus around that, obviously you need to kind of weave in content somewhere. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of people getting drunk. And then Otto is going to be holding back Florian's hair while he's throwing up in the bathroom in Bavaria. But maybe that'll get them closer and maybe that'll get Otto more into AI. I don't mean to
pick on. It might be autoimmune by that. Might be on.
We're just gonna let's dad joke this thing. But we're gonna go back and continue to peel this Paul onion, because looking back at just your LinkedIn profile, there is a ton of kind of different interests that you clearly had growing up in this melting pot of your own creation. I don't know what the commute from Dubai to Australia is to go to school, but it seems significant.
It beats mine.
If our goal is to humanize and find the next Paul, the next passionate Paul out there, how do you go from the middle of Dubai, clearly someone that I guess expressed an interest in finance and economics because you grew up around all of this money while it was really building up? How does that happen? Where does an interest in technology come from? Is that just generational? Is there some background in your family in technology, in event planning? Did you just love drinking beer with people named Otto?
I think I was always passionate about communities and bringing people together. And yeah, working in finance is nice, but guess what? Money is not everything. And there's nothing that brings you more than bringing people together and seeing people smile. This is, for me, it's a reward beyond when people make connections and they take knowledge away from it. And this is how you grow your network about it, right? Because then I started also the podcast. I don't come from the tech space. I've always been a bit, I would say, tech savvy, right? Because my generation had a PlayStation. I had these things. I'm not like you guys. I can't program. But for me, it was like Command and Conquer, Red Alert, Edge of Empires, sitting there, Counter-Strike, playing a big computer. Back then, they had computer plazas. You had like 200 computers in one place and you would just play video games till the crack of dawn. But this is, for me, it's like communities. And I think, yeah, it's when you grow up in a melting pot like Dubai, where you see different cultures get along with each other, and then you just go to other places around the globe and you see people are very separated, segregated. It just makes you realize that the problem is society and
society. It sounds like a very small problem you're trying to solve.
Yeah, but I think it's like stereotyping, and this is the problem. And like, yeah,
it's all the labels.
It's the labels. It's the labels.
So I was going to start with welcoming you by saying Habibi. That was my only chance, and I totally missed it. So a relatively very diverse background, traveled the world, continue to travel the world. Could you share with us, how did you end up in Dubai? Was it dad's job, mom's?
It was my dad. My dad was in construction. So it was really for me, like, I think it's the biggest blessing I ever got from my parents, right? Unintentionally, to take me out of that regional German Bavarian environment and pulling me out, hardly speaking English. I remember my first day in school, basically, over there. I could say good morning and that's it. And it's like, it was just great because my father was in the Middle East for many years. He was in construction, so the high-rise buildings and foundation works for it. So I really saw the sand pit grow to the city it is now. And did something where family pictures at home is like when Burj Al Arab, which everybody knows probably is the 7-star hotel, was nothing than a construction pit. And we would be standing there on the Land Cruiser on the beach. You can't even drive on the beach anymore. That beach doesn't exist anymore because put a Palm Island in front of it now. But Dubai is a perfect example of how a community can grow. And I think they've done this really well because you have the local population, back there you call it the locals, the Emiratis, it's not even 6%. And they really managed to attract all these talents from across the globe to really great, great things. Lots of people don't know they own some of the biggest investment funds in the world. So it's not just the oil, like everybody thinks. No, they're actually investing the money in the sustainable projects. You have Mazda City, which is a completely net zero run city. And like, yeah, it's amazing to see what people do.
No, they're changing and getting at the data center as well. So going back to you being in Dubai, your father being in the construction business, how did you end up choosing BCom as your major?
Boah, this is a good question because the question is, what else are you going to study back then? It's either marketing or it's business. It's like a lot of people went and studied hotel management in Dubai, which is quite the obvious thing, right?
Bugatti sales, I assume, was a big one.
Yeah, and then Bugatti sales.
Land Cruiser sales. So how many Americans actually do understand what a Land Cruiser is?
I don't know. Well, it's like, it's a better car than a GMC. I can say that much.
Come see the sponsorship, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Land Cruiser has a double air condition, which a lot of other car manufacturers don't have. So you have an air condition system in the front and in the back, and you have a cooler box in the middle, which is quite standard in the US, but it wasn't standard in the Middle East back then. So that's where Land Cruiser comes from. It's quite an interesting fact.
All right, so tell us about the call, like why BCom versus marketing or hotel management and any other sector that you could have gotten into with all the exposure that you had, right?
Yeah, because so my dad was in construction, obviously. So he was selling also these heavy equipment for millions of euros and stuff. So I used to go as a little boy always with my dad on sales trips sometimes and sit in meetings with a tie on and everything. And I saw how my dad was doing business because business in the Middle East is just a bit different because there you have to build friendships and connections and networks, right? And this is why it really like naturally like came to me that I was like, you're good with people. So you need to stay with people. Marketing is a nice thing. You have to be creative in things, but I was always somebody who was very like people on, you know? So sales is a beautiful thing for it. We call it the gift of the gap. That's what we call it here in London, for example. So if you can talk to people, express yourself, and you become sort of a storyteller. And storyteller is something which comes, well, straight into event space, right? What are you doing? You're creating a story for people over 2 days and they go through this amazing experience and they should walk away with memories for the rest of their lives. But this is why BCom. I think this was, well, you can't study sales, but in order to be, you need to study something. There's some accounting in it, some finance. Yeah. Well, I never really thought about it, to be honest, Nabil. I just went for it because Dad said that should be the right thing to do. And, all right, Dad, that's the right thing to do. There's no long discussion.
So that might be a generational difference from my kids, because if I told my kids to study something, they would study whatever the opposite is.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's the westernization as well. I think where Paul was growing up, that was expected.
Right.
Expected. Yes, as well.
So let's step back just in time for a bit, right? I do really want to cover and talk about this new initiative that you're working on. So you get done with college, you've got exposure with the construction segment. However, I see that you got involved in automotive.
Yes.
You got involved in a few other endeavors with consulting, so on and so forth. Yes. So could you at a high level share that journey and that transition from construction, automotive into the data infrastructure piece and then picking up a segment, which is crucial to the sector to get the word out, create awareness and bring forth real concerns and what are we doing to grow this space? So I'd love to hear this journey at a high level.
This journey. Okay. Well, 2008, you had the financial crisis, which means 2009, the construction sector was not booming anymore. So I say, okay, what am I going to do now? And then there was a company that does spare parts for heavy trucks, equipment, and military vehicles. And they're like, oh, we're looking for a German. Huh. I was like, yes, I'm here to buy. I was like, well, this is where it comes in. If you can sell anything, you can sell this. So during this lovely time at the company, I traveled all across Africa. I've been to Congo, Ghana, even places like Lubumbashi, which is really like with the Congo, like the United Nations, that war zone is literally like 20 kilometers down the road. And like really have seen so many cultures, have seen so many things. And like at a young age, because my mom was just like, are you crazy? You're just 22 years old. What are you doing? I was like, let me live my life. Like, I grew up in Dubai. I could do what I want to do. Because you don't think about the...
Amazing how the reaction to the mother is different than the reaction to the father.
Yes, the mother... yes, dad.
You know,
yes, dad. I'll study that. Mom, leave me alone. I grew up in Dubai.
I tell you why, because dad was traveling the same way at my age. So he could not tell me like, oh, you can't travel to like these countries because he was doing it when he was my age, right? That's how he started his career. So that's why he was like just quiet about it. I was like, oh, don't forget to take the satellite telephone just in case your mobile phone doesn't work. All right, dad, no problem. And so this was like funny how the household is a bit different on that angle. And then, yeah, I saw it was really going well. And then I went and opened my own business and I started my own company and got married in between that space as well, somewhere in Las Vegas when I was 21. Yeah. Both
there's
of
no
you.
Way, there's no way we're going to get
out
of here.
That's not on LinkedIn. That's not on LinkedIn.
Right. I hope it doesn't get into that movie, you know, what was the name of the movie? So they got married in Vegas. The guy gets bachelor party or something like that.
Hangover?
Hangover, yes. Right. Yes.
Was there an Elvis impersonator involved?
We did it in the Venetian.
Fancier than the Elvis drive through.
On a gondola,
It might have been the real Elvis there.
But I can tell you, it didn't last. So, yeah, but it's all right. You're young and impulsive, right?
Let's get into that. How long did that last? Did you make it out of Vegas married?
It lasted 7 years.
Okay, so it's something. That's
fine. It lasted 7 years, which was also one of the things that pushed me to start my own business, which was going also amazing. And then the marriage fell apart. And Dubai is like, if you have been to Dubai, you realize it's literally two roads and a couple of buildings. And if you live there since a young age, everybody knows you. So for me, it was then, okay, get rid of the business and on to new chapters. And that's really how I went to London. And the event space came absolutely... Because my dad was like, oh, what are you going to work now? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I'll just try to find something. I'm a salesperson with international experience. Nothing can go wrong there. And then this is how I got a job in event sales. And that's where I started and worked my way up to it. Because it's also a beautiful community. Everybody knows everybody and people are very creative.
But like not necessarily tech events, just events in general.
Just events in general. But I was always tech savvy, like fixing the phones and like fixing laptops, computers, opening the screws on the back. And it's not rocket science, is it? So I was like, yeah, tech could be my thing. And then obviously as the space is evolving, started on the podcast during the pandemic, where both of you have been guests on it. And I was like, okay, it's quite an interesting industry. It's like this, people just don't realize how much we touch data centers every day in our lives.
What is that transition like, though? How does it go from, is it the pandemic that forces you to, when you even started the podcast, this is Uptime Punks, right? So when you started that Uptime Punks podcast, even it wasn't necessarily focused on digital infrastructure.
No, it wasn't so the thing is, we were trying to find a new way how to engage with the audience because you wouldn't run physical events. So how can I keep my audience engaged and keep the fellow people up and running and interested in events? Suggested this internally in the business. Answer was, it's not interesting. This doesn't work, right? Because legacy companies, this is how it thinks. They can't think outside the box. And Tim started the podcast. And you know what? It went amazing because we just brought people basically to other people's home within listening to the podcast. Like, what is Philip all about? What is Nabil all about? We had like stupid questions like, what's your favorite COVID pandemic gadget, right? And the stuff we got from people was absolutely unbelievable.
I think my answer was a house.
Yours was a house, but somebody got an implant of an NFT chip, so he doesn't need to touch anything on the tubes in London anymore.
What could possibly go wrong?
But listen, he's legally not allowed to implant it in London, so he just did it himself at home. And this is, I was like, you're kidding me. And he's like, yeah, it didn't go very well, as you can see. It's like, I was like, all right. But like, yeah, we just really went on that journey. And then it was just amazing because even Pepsi reached out back then, and we had the CEO of Pepsi on the podcast, and he was showing us his Marvel collection because he was working for Disney beforehand. And people couldn't see it on the podcast, but behind him was like Marvel statues and the Avengers and these things. And it just really opened my horizon to like, that's a beautiful community. And imagine if you bring all these great heads and spirits under one roof in one event and try to really, let's see what happens. What can they create together and what can they create in the
And let's get them drunk. And then yeah, it'll be perfect.
With some music.
Why is the guy from Pepsi hurling an Iron Man figurine at the CEO of Flex Central? I have no idea, but it's fine.
Yeah, but it would be interesting to see, right? So this is where this whole idea came from, because I think it's just needed. It needs to freshen up a little bit. And you know what? It's nothing new what we're doing, because the marketing industry does it. The marketing industry has gone away from traditional trade fairs like everybody attends. Years ago, they have things called the Barcode Festival, right? Where they get like lineups of music, people go, they enjoy, and it's like a festival. And it's like, how come every other industry can do it apart from us? And then you'll see out there, a lot of people call themselves a tech festival or the tech fest or things like this. Why? It's still a traditional trade fair. You're just using a name. Or what I see now is a lot that data center events are saying they're AI. Everything is about AI. No, you're not talking about AI. You're just talking about capacities. And this is not AI, because how about you bring the AI decision makers and the data center decision makers under one roof and actually let them talk with each other? How about that? That would probably
bring in the robots. Bring in the robots to give their side of it.
Yes.
So for our audience sake, and I want to really emphasize on the fact you've got an absolutely amazing history and a career path.
Thanks.
And what's wonderful and absolutely amazing, the way you've expressed yourself and shared everything with us, the fact that you grew up in a multicultural environment, you've traveled the world, and what you're doing even today is giving you an opportunity to go explore and experience the world. That's opening up things for you. That's opening up how we present, share, and involve the communities and engage communities in something that's right, whereby it doesn't just become a checkbox. And that's the struggle that we continue to have, that every person that's in this space and or sector that's trying to do things and talk about things, it's a checkbox. So examples, diversity, equity, inclusion for companies, it's a checkbox. For event producer, it's been a checkbox. Artificial intelligence, it's a checkbox. Sustainability, carbon neutrality, decarbonization, so on and so forth. They're all checkbox, vaporwares, and brainwashing. With your new endeavor, and from what I gather and in conversations with you, you talk about building a community, you talk about engaging people, you talk about open conversations. Where and how do you see your endeavor taking place? And how do you plan on not just talking about it, but actually delivering a product that will make the change and the difference that we continue to speak about?
Well, so every community has a community leader, right? I'll give you a classic example. I did a podcast with somebody who leads the LGBT community at HPE, right? We called it the double-edged sword of pride. So why don't you take that person and you say, hey, look, I want you to come with me and please make sure that the interests of your community are here and they're covered. So you do this with various different community leaders. And what you create is like, it's almost like a bag of Skittles, right? Different colors, different everything.
And I love that analogy, bag of Skittles.
It's like a bag of Skittles. But this is how you need to look at it. Because if you want to bring the tech community together, the tech community will look like a bag of Skittles. It's different colors, different shapes. Neither one of them will be the same. But all together in one pot, it will just be, it'd be beautiful. And this is where the rainbow comes in, right? Which is for the diversity and inclusion.
Taste the rainbow. I will say this. Skittles tend to be similar shapes in the bag.
But they're not perfect. not even a Skittle is perfect.
A Skittle is perfect.
Not even a Skittle is perfect.
There goes the Skittles endorsement. Oh, damn it. That's Skittles true. Are perfect. The perfection is in the imperfection, Skittles. So we love you for it.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is for me, I go to people and I say, look, I'm not an expert at this. And I don't want to step on people's toes. You need to really tell me, how can I make sure that your community gets the best out of it and give people really the wheel to drive the vehicle themselves, right? And all I'm doing here is I'm trying to facilitate with a platform, with a location to say, okay, this is the two dates. Let's try to make it happen. And I had now already various community leaders from metaverse communities reaching out and saying, hey, we normally do a summit for the metaverse. Do you mind if we would come and join you guys? And I'm like, hey, yeah, more than welcome. Metaverse is also something which is of interest to everybody, right? And it really brings it all together because we don't just want to tick boxes. It's a very thin line, right? Because, of course, everybody's like, well, you need to make sure that panels have to cover a certain ratio and it has to be like this. Yeah, well, I think a panel should be the best person that can talk on the topic. And sometimes it can be a 22-year-old that works for one of the big tech companies that can talk about it. Or it could be a female. It could be whatever. It could be a queer. Like, it doesn't need to be a tick box. It is your community thinks that that is the best person to speak on behalf of them about this topic. And this is how it should be brought together. And this is also where people like yourselves come in, who are also, let's say, rock stars in the data center industry, right? And it's like really just mixing it up because there's bigger things that need to be discussed. Like, I'm planning to put panels together to really discuss big tech. What does diversity actually mean? And let's put these young people on stage and let them express how they actually feel. And I think this will be probably a jaw-dropping moment for a lot of executives in the tech industry because they think, oh, we're doing everything fine. Yeah, we're changing the logo once a year. We tick the box, right?
Or we hang a rainbow flag.
We hang a rainbow flag or, oh, happy Women's Day, happy da-da-da. No, they don't feel that way. They don't want to hear these things. If that generation now speaks up, it's different than other generations that didn't speak up. So let's empower them and put them on the stage and let them talk about it. And everybody should listen to them because they're the leaders of the future.
I think there's a couple of points there, right? You have this kind of almost anti-woke type message where the concept of wokeness is the pendulum moving in the direction where it's just diversity for diversity's sake and to check that box as opposed to for the benefit of all cultures. And I think the other thing is this concept of diversity not just being a color, an ethnicity, a gender. It's diversity of socioeconomic condition. It's diversity of thought, diversity of lived experience. And I think if you had to connect a through line, usually when someone interviews you, it is your formalized education traditionally that informs where you've gone in your career. And I think in your case, it's so obvious what the through line is, having grown up in Dubai, which is almost a manufactured melting pot, and seeing growing up in a bag of Skittles and then wanting to export that bag of Skittles to these other markets. I'm just going to keep on going with the Skittles metaphor.
It's a nice one, isn't it?
And I don't mean to offend Starburst. Starburst is also good.
M&M's.
Or M&M's.
Actually, as a matter of fact, you know what? At the end of the day, they're all owned by the same company, Mars.
As long as it comes in a McFlurry, it's all right.
Right.
Yeah. Just to add to what both of you are saying, Phil and I talk about it all the time, that we need to hire for potential, not credentials. And I believe that's kind of like the message that you're carrying with your initiative as well.
It is really, because we're really trying to really make it about the individual. The name Techstars, right? Yes, everybody would know the big investment firm Techstars, right? So we wrote our name different with a dot in it and really put the stars in capitals because it's about the individual. It's about the individual attending because everybody we believe is a star within the community. They should get a chance to shine. And we're open for suggestions from other community leaders. If you want to get involved, come around, let us know, like the door is open, right? Let's make it great and let's bring everybody together. But I think it's really about the individual and empowering them and giving them the chance to speak. I see a lot of other organizers are also trying to do that, ride the whole young talent wave, which is a great initiative they're trying to do. But I think, like I said, the young talent needs to be able to relate to the environment. And for that, you need to go out of spaces where they either can't afford to attend because it's somewhere in the south of France or in Singapore, or you need to make it accessible for them because if you need to be close to universities, you need to be close to these things, really accommodate them to bring them in there. And then it's also about once they get there, what they're going to get out of it, because they want to speak to their mentors and they want to learn and they want to really gain some knowledge.
So Paul, having said that, are we ready for the big reveal? When and where are these events going to be?
When and where? Oh, God. So there's going to come something in March next year, which is in Italy. We're planning to do it next year, March, in Italy, Milan, which is, why do we choose Milan? Because in Milan, you have the fashion industry. Like, it goes back to the community. You have the fashion industry, you have the big universities. It's the financial capital of Italy, right? So that's why we chose Milan as a location. And then the other location is in Munich, which is going to be in October 25 next year. Why is it Munich? It's Munich because Munich is one of the biggest software sales places across Europe. So a lot of American companies have the sales offices for the software products and everything in Munich. And this is from where they basically sell everything, because the German economy, well, most of the capital and machinery and all the big companies sit in Munich. So that's why you have a big tech community there again. And you have the Technical University of Munich, which is very famous for its students and for the research. So this is basically the idea behind it. The topics we'll cover is data center, AI, data, cloud. We even went away from calling it DevOps or all of these. We call it CloudOps, because now everything you can put in a bracket is CloudOps, right? And we're not doing it in traditional exhibition spaces. So you guys will be surprised. We're doing it. The one in Munich is in the car museum, which is an old railway station that's being refurbished. And yeah, this comes back to also the sustainable part of it. Let's reuse old spaces. If you can have a rave in it on the weekend, why would you not be able to have a conference in it?
Absolutely. I would say I love it. That's not just talking about being disruptive. You are being disrupted. So no more events in Las Vegas. No more events in major NFL cities. Let's go to Milan.
This does not seem like a great convention center concept, right? So no more events in convention centers. I love the concept. I think I mentioned this to you the last time we spoke about this, of doing like a data center geek fashion show in Milan, where everyone is doing like their newest hoodie or their newest cargo shorts.
That would be actually a fun one. But you know what? We should auction them off and the proceeds go to Nomad Futurists.
I love it. You heard it here first, folks.
I think it's a great one. We should do it.
Absolutely. Paul, this has been really exciting. I'm glad that we were able to get you on the podcast and also share with our audience your background and what you're doing. And it's not just talk. It's going to be put into actions. And again, Nomad Futurists is really proud to partner up with you and
share
content and
I also want to change. But I always wanted to say to people, like, if you don't see it going that way as I'm saying it, hold me accountable for it. Reach out and be like, you said you're going to do this and this for our community, but you haven't done it. So I'm not somebody who's going to hide. You can find me on LinkedIn or reach out to Nabil and Philip. I think me and Nabil see each other quite often anyhow, but it's like, be part of it. Let's create something really different here and let's unite.
And we're going to finish off with this. If you want to be the change, as one of our friends says,
if you want to be the change, be the change. One of our very close friends.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Paul. This was great.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
This has been great. Nothing lasts forever. Markets will come back. Currencies will rebound. Businesses will go on. And we will all move on. That could happen next week, next month, or next year. At Nomad Futurists, we are confident that those who prepare rather than panic will come out of this stronger. Thank you for joining us. This has been brought to you by Nomad Futurist. Check us online at nomadfuturist.org. And thank you for listening and subscribing, as well as your continued support.